Blog Talk Radio.
Self-respect, intellect, increasing our knowledge to keep ourselves in check.
Positivity is all we need. Together we will
TQMind, tweet me at RSD44, or if you live in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, contact me at 240-778-5219. Once again, that's 240-778-5219. Tranquil Mind by Rob, Massage and Wellness. And we are closing out the month of March, and we have been doing themes of the madness. And what we're going to conclude this month is the madness that is this tragedy in France from the German Wings airline that crashed into the mountains in the French Alps. Now, for those who are not familiar with this story, or for those who have not seen all the updates on this particular story, just give you an overview of what happened. But we're gonna tackle that in a few minutes. But there's so many different elements in regards to what was happening with the German Wing flight. You've got the issues of mental illness, the issue of the emotional and physical toll that flying a plane takes on these pilots. You also have talk about what preventative measures could have been taken in order to avoid such a tragedy. So we're going to tackle all these particular topics tonight in regards to this, because even though this tragedy happened in France, it is something that could happen in the United States, could be affected here, not only for national travel, but international travel. And are there any preventative measures or steps that can be taken in order to not completely 100% prevent it? Of course, certain situations, circumstances on this particular, and this particular tragedy are completely unavoidable, or I would say unable to prepare for. So we want to make sure that we are going through some of the steps that we can possibly do with the airlines if they choose to do it economically, if it's feasible, if it's attainable to do. And also going deeper to the fact that are there different ways to combat mental illness that would balance out some of the tragedy and would avoid some people to feel the tragic events that they had. So there's so many different avenues you can go on in this particular topic. If you have any comments or any questions in regards to what was going on in this particular tragedy that you feel you need answered, give us a call, 347-850-1228. The phone lines are open right now. So let's get right into it. For the latest update on the tragedy, what we are finding out is that there was a perfect storm of physical, emotional, and mental trauma that this particular pilot had. And that is the main question that a lot of people have in this particular situation and circumstance, because of the fact that there were so many different elements that were going on in this pilot's mind prior to this crash. First, you got the mental aspect of how he was recently diagnosed with. When you're diagnosed with clinical depression, there's so many different things that have to be done before you even think about stepping on a plane as a passenger, let alone as a pilot. because of the manic and depressive states that the mind goes through when you are diagnosed with clinical depression, can take a toll on the aspect of the clarity that this pilot needs in order to successfully pilot a plane, especially going three countries across, going from Spain to Germany. That's not a 2-hour flight. That is an extended flight that, when a person is in a depressive state, can definitely be a trigger for certain things. And then, recently, I'm informed that he had vision issues. So right now you have a person that was just diagnosed with depression, and then he finds out that he has vision issues, which could definitely hinder his opportunity to become a captain on the ship, because he was a co-pilot, so he was not the captain. So that point could say, okay, that could trigger an element of not wanting to continue on life. So you have those two aspects. And then the third and final one is the emotional aspect, where he just broke up with his girlfriend. So now you have a person who just broke up with his girlfriend. He's feeling down about that. He finds out that he's clinically depressed, which can alter and affect his employment, one. And then you find out he has vision issues, which will definitely affect his employment as a pilot, and also will affect any chances of him elevating his career or having a long-term career. So he has all those three things going on, and then he gets onto the flight. And for those who don't know the period of events, 25 to 30 minutes after the flight takes off, they're at their cruising altitude. Now, at this point, like clockwork, typically the captain says, okay, we're at the cruising altitude, I'm going to place on autopilot, and then I'm going to use the restroom and come right back. Now, this is a European plane. So it's a different way that they go about the security measures on a European plane compared to here in the United States. Now, the National Transportation and Safety Board requires here in the United States that once the captain leaves to use the restroom, that another person, typically the head flight attendant, would be in the cockpit with the co-pilot, so that way there's always two people there at one time, just in case something goes wrong, electrical malfunctions. There is another person in there to radio in while the co-pilot is trying to handle those matters, so he's not trying to do multiple things at one time. That's how it's done here in America. In Europe, they have different standards. So it might be a different standard in Spain, different standard in Germany compared to here in the United States. Each country or each region has their own standards and bylaws that they follow. So the thing is, we have to look at, as Americans, do not base what happened over there on American standards, and don't feel that American standards are similar to what they have over in Europe, completely different set of standards. So as the captain comes back, he's banging on the door, and they say in the recorder, you can hear the co-pilot breathing calmly and not being irrational, not being sporadic. He did not pass out. He was gradually, what he did, he engaged the lock, the deadbolt, on that door, so that way the pilot cannot get in, and lowered the plane at a slow and steady pace. So basically what he was doing, he intentionally, you can tell it was intentional, because of the fact that he did at a slow and steady pace to the point where he would not alert any signals from air traffic control that something might be wrong. Because if that was the case, then they would have some jets out there immediately to try to quell the situation. So this is what's going on right now. He pulls it around to a remote section of France, into the French Alps, an area that he's familiar with because he's familiarized himself with the French Alps by hiking and traveling over his short lifespan. So he knew exactly how to gradually lower the plane. He knew exactly where to go, where to minimize any collateral damage outside of everybody that's on the plane. But he was strategic and methodical in the way he went into the mountain, which shows a blatant and deliberate sign of mental illness. Of course, immediately, because of his skin tone, because of who he was and where he's from, the automatic thought, oh, could be a possible set of terrorism. But think about that logically. There's no way you can even mention anything about terrorism in this particular incident, Because if that was the case, the last place that a terrorist would want to crash would be in a remote city in the French Alps. If it was a terrorist attack, there would have been a more deliberate way of steering that plane towards a major city. Like, the closest major city would have been Nice or going into Paris. So that eliminates that. So we know what was going on physically, mentally, and emotionally with him. So these are some of the questions that I've been getting over the past couple of days in regards to this particular topic. It's a very hot-button topic because people are very concerned about who is conducting these airplanes. You know, there are some things you can't handle, you know, mechanical failure, you know, birds flying into the engine, icy roads, icy weather conditions. But the personnel that you have on your plane can be controlled by the airline company. And that's because the airline company should be doing a thorough mental and physical evaluation prior to them being accepted on the job. Question number one becomes, how do you do this mental and physical evaluation effectively? How do you do it efficiently so that way you're not wasting time between getting pilots? And how do you do it ethically where you're not discriminating against someone just because of their state at that particular time? And this is where the debate has been. I've heard the side where if you're diagnosed with depression, you should not be a pilot, period. Point blank, period. You should not be piloting a plane because the sporadic nature of being in a depressive state. So that's one avenue of rationale. The other avenue of rationale is on the side of caution, saying that, okay, we're going to let you fly this plane, even though we know you have bouts of depression, but you have to be monitored under your medication at all times, because the medication can also cause side effects that can disrupt, and also the physical aspect of the pilot. And then you have the ethical middle ground, where you don't necessarily want to banish and abolish any pilot with mental illness, because that will probably back out a pretty large fleet. And at the same time, you don't want to give them free rein, saying, okay, as long as you take your vitamins, you're good. Take your medicine, you're good. So this is phase number one of where do we draw the line when it comes down to how to effectively hire pilots for our planes. Once again, this is the Rod Stevens Show, Blog Talk Radio, Toilet Productions, Toilet Entertainment. We're talking about the madness, these broken wings, because we have to figure out a way to find that ground where the pilot has to earn their way onto the plane. I think that's being lax. He had, I believe, total 960 flight hours, which is respectable. But knowing his situation, was that enough for him to fully be accepted as a pilot? And the thing is with that, it's a matter of not trying to press the issue. Vision is very key. So this person had poor vision, and he was going through mental and emotional distress. So the poor vision aspect should have been something that should have been caught right there. As soon as he found out that he had poor vision, corrective vision, that should have been alerted to his boss, to whoever is the management supervisor for that particular airline company, and his role should have been reduced right then and there. But what about the mental aspect? That's another question that I have heard over the past couple days since this tragedy occurred. What about the mental aspect? Now, if a pilot is losing his sight, nine times out of ten, their supervisor is alerted. But when a pilot mentally is having issues, should it be the responsibility and the right of the doctor to step in and say, you know what, I'm going to give you this copy of the paper, but I'm also going to have to alert your supervisor that for the time being, until you take your medication and until the mental illness is controlled, then you should not be flying a plane. We're going to be flying on a plane. That is That's one of the main questions and concerns that we have. There are confidentiality agreements between the patient and the client that should prevent the, you know, prevent the doctor to go to your employer. The doctor should not have to, did not have the right, I think, to go to your employer and to say, oh, well, he's messed up. He, you know, he has a mental issue. He shouldn't be flying on a plane. However, there are certain medications and certain illnesses that will cause it to be a physical liability for a person to fly a plane. And that's the question. Would this go into the fact of medical physical liability? If I am injured and I am on OxyContin, I cannot get on a plane as a pilot because that is the physical liability to all those that are on the plane. Same thing with certain antidepressants. With certain antidepressants, it does cause tensing of the muscles, does cause a sense of dizziness or disorientation that could affect the flight. A lot of times when you're taking antidepressants, they're saying you should not operate machinery while you're on these antidepressants. Now, last time I checked, an airplane is a very large piece of machinery. So that should be a physical liability when it comes down to flying a plane. So that's something. Now, of course, he tore up the paperwork that he probably was supposed to bring to his supervisor. So how do you handle that? Should that be, because it is a physical liability, should the doctor have the should the supervisor have the authorization to get information from the doctor? Based on the medication, I would say yes, but not for all incidents of mental illness or mental distress. Because it might not be something that where the severity of the mental illness would affect the pilot, because the medication that they might be on might be something that will control and contain without any hard side effects that will disorient or destroy that particular pilot. So that's question number two. But then you got the feasibility of advanced technology on these planes. These planes are still running on antiquated ideas and concepts. You figure we spend all this money for plane tickets, spend all this money on baggage claim, spend all this money on the additional and peripheral aspects of flying. But where is it going? Gas prices are down, oil prices are down, maintenance is being maintained, employees are working harder, but there are certain antiquated concepts and ideas that are on these planes. First off, the flight data recorder and the main recorder, both black boxes, are very antiquated systems. Are they necessary to have on there? Yes. However, there should be digital recordings that are being transmitted to whatever air traffic control organization that is responsible for that particular country. Like here, the National Air Traffic Control Association. NACA should be able to digitally record all commercial flights and store the information. So that way, if something tragic happens, it is very easy to access the recordings within minutes. Very possible. And should be very inexpensive. However, we are still in an antiquated way of somebody has to get the helicopter, get a rescue squad, get a scuba diver to find a black box. Look at Malaysia Airlines. They still haven't found that one flight, and they still haven't found any recordings from that one flight because they had scuba divers and submarines and all this trying to ping for a black box. Imagine the information we would have found out if digitally they knew what was going on prior to the descent and prior to the disappearance. I don't even know if the plane crashed into the ocean, crashed into a mountain, disappeared, vanished in thin air, aliens got it. We have no idea because of the fact that nobody could find the black box. Nobody could find the recording. And then the batteries only have a limited shelf life. So if they have a limited shelf life, then once the battery dies, that's it. That doesn't happen with the cloud. Digital recording is essential in order to make sure that we are successfully monitoring commercial airlines. And that wouldn't take much to do. That wouldn't take much to do at all. How hard is it to create a digital recording system on a plane? Wouldn't be that expensive. Besides, they already raise airfare prices all the time anyway. So it should not be a big deal to raise airline prices a couple dollars to keep a digital recording for our safety. Mr. Rogers TV Show, Toilet Productions, Toilet Entertainment, Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about these broken wings. Let me know the airline system is broken because of the antiquated style that they do. Also, the way that the captains and the attendants enter in and out of the doors. Now, in this case, there was a manual key, but because the co-pilot had the ability to lock on the inside, this situation is very difficult. How do you combat or handle that situation? It's probably almost virtually impossible to do because of the fact that it was an unfortunate circumstance. You know, the pilot thought he can run to the restroom and come back, and probably didn't bring his key. So even with the keypad, he tried to enter the keypad, it doesn't work. That's where the backup key is essential to unlock the deadbolt. Neither of those tactics were able to be used because of the fact that the person intentionally rigged the door. So that's a moot point in this situation. However, should there be other access points for the captain to get into the cockpit? That is a very gray area, which I would shade on the fact of keeping it the way it is, because if extra access, who's to know that the right person has the access to that cockpit? You know, you can't just say, oh, why is it so easy for the person to walk on the inside? There should be a way where the captain could have gotten there. Why? What if that wasn't the captain? What if that was an irate passenger? What if that someone that was trying to hijack the plane? What was it, someone that was trying to cause physical harm to the pilot? All these aspects could happen. So you don't want an easier access to the cockpit based on the safety of everybody on that plane. So that's null and void in that particular incident. And the third one goes along line with the digital recording. Video cameras. And people say, oh, that costs too much, it's not economically feasible. The NTSB said that it sounds great, but it's just not a method that they feel is important. They feel it's more imperative to make sure they have good quality planes and not worry about all the technology that goes with them. And I agree with that. I understand that. However, this is a public transportation vehicle. That means that public transportation vehicles are normally monitored. You're monitored when you get on a city bus. You're monitored when you get on the train. You're monitored when you're on the Amtrak, because of the fact that it is a public transportation vehicle and should be able to view in, have surveillance to make sure that everybody's okay, to make sure they can monitor and assist in the summer controls. Imagine if there's a plane going down and they have the ability to call air traffic controller, and air traffic controller will be able to see what they see. Basically, a crisis can be averted from the simple fact of the dispatcher having vision. That's always important. That's not just in airlines. That's in a lot of different levels. You know, if you have a high-end security system with video cameras on in your home, somebody breaks into your home, they're able to alert the authorities and tell them exactly where the incident occurred because they can see it. And if they can see it, of course, it creates more safety. And that's the biggest point that I would say, that is about increasing the safety passengers and the crew. So video cameras have to be an essential part. If it's on a tour bus, if it's on a school bus, if it's on a city bus, if it's able to be on an Amtrak, why not the plane? These private companies need to act like a public vehicle instead of looking at a private entity just flying the masses around. And once they do that, then they can make their products safer. I mean, there's only so much you can do when you're in the air. You're 35,000, 40,000 feet in the air. There's only one way to go. However, some of these preventative measures could actually help crashing and the amount of severe crashing that we see in not only in our country but around the world. So will that happen? Probably not. It would take an industry innovator. Say, for example, if American Airlines jumped on a board and said, I'm going to get a dash cam, then every other company will follow suit. Now, numbers, depending on the airline company, will range in the billions of dollars. And that's where the problem comes. If you have a multi-billion-dollar industry and then you say you got to spend close to $1 billion to secure it, 9 times out of 10, the management will not do it. So what can you do in this situation? Where can you go when the pilot is unconscious, when the pilot is under stress and they're trying to relay messages to the crew, and the crew have no idea what's going on because they don't have any visual, or they might even have any audio because a lot of the times in that black box, the audio was non-existent. And if the black box did not have sufficient audio because it only records in bits and spells, then that's not the way to find out exactly what was going on. If we had a camera in there, we'd be able to see the demeanor. We'd be able to see the thought process and possibly could be able to prevent something like this once a person knows that they're on camera all the time. Simple fix, create a more safer environment. And that's what this show is about today. Thank you once again listening each and every week. Love Talk will resume tomorrow, finishing up the madness. So please listen out. Love Talk tomorrow, 11 o'clock, right here on Blog Talk Radio. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. But the tragedy was very important here that we need to get that out the way and really discuss some of the things that could have helped, or some of the things that could at least give a piece of more, a broader peace of mind. So these are the things that we have to demand that are done here. That was a European flight, different rules, different regulations, but the regulations here are clearly on the side of safety and security. Been like that since 2001, so in 14 years, still not where it should be, but there should be an avenue and a way to make it where it's more safer and more comfortable for the passengers to go on a plane and have that security, just as secure as you can be in order to fly on a plane. Once that happens, economically, logistically, it'll be a little expensive now, but what that will do, that will give the passenger a bigger peace of mind in order to say, you know what, I'm getting on this plane because I feel more comfortable. More people go on city buses than any other time in the world, any other time in about 20 years, because people feel more comfortable with the cameras there. They feel less of a threat. And that threat can cause economic difficulty for the airline companies that are just trying to get from underwater from past 5-6 years. So hopefully the right choice, make the right decisions, and do the things that are necessary for the passenger safety, for the crew safety, as well as the pirates. And once again, thank you for listening to the show each and every week. And this is Mr. Roz TV. Until next time, we'll talk.
Intellect, increasing our knowledge to keep ourselves in check.
Positivity is all we need. Together.